Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Cheryl Tebben Appellant versus Gil Haugen Construction Appellee. For the appellant, Tebben is Mr. James Abreskin, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee, Gil Haugen Construction, is Michael S. McKnight, an attorney also from Sioux Falls. Mr. Abresk, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, members of the court, and counsel. This is a workers' compensation case. Brian Tebben, who's the deceased husband of the claimant, Cheryl Tebben, died. His treating neurologist, Dr. Gene Koob, diagnosed as cause of his death dissection of his vertebral artery. He also said that it came from his work activities. This was confirmed by Dr. Daniel Crosby, the radiologist who read an MRA ordered by one of the doctors treating him. Also confirmed by Mrs. Tebben's expert witness, Dr. David Sable of Rapid City, who's a neurologist up there. Dr. Koob was not allowed to testify. He had heart surgery at the time of the hearing, and we had no idea when he'd recover, so we decided to go without him. And the reason was that we had his records were included in the evidence record, and Dr. Sable was to use his medical records during the hearing, during the department's hearing.
Mr. Abresk, yes. The way I read it it appeared to me that you withdrew Koob's name in order to avoid disclosing this letter. It didn't appear to me that it had anything. I mean, he did submit the affidavit about the heart condition, but it looked procedurally like he didn't want to disclose this letter, so you took him off the witness list.
No, that's not the case at all.
What happened? How did it?
Pardon?
It had nothing to do with.
No, it had nothing at all to do with the letter. In fact, I can just tell the court right now what that letter was. I had written to Dr. Koob. I said, how should I ask questions of the neurologist up in Minneapolis, the expert.
Is that letter in the record?
Pardon?
Is that letter in the record?
Only the part that was excised, the part where I'd asked him a question.
But he gave
his opinion. Well, it was excised by the hearing examiner, Your Honor.
Yeah.
He gave his opinion and the rest of the letter, and what she withheld, and I think properly so, was the talk about you wrote to me and asked me what question I should ask. Here's a question you should ask, you know. And there was a big fuss made about it. I probably should have disclosed the whole thing right on the spot, but at the time I was nervous about saying that I'd asked him a question, you know, how to ask him. But it had nothing to do with withdrawing him. He had heart surgery. We didn't know how long it was going to take. It had been going on for about a year of the case, and I thought, well, we're going to use his records with Dr. Sabo in any event. So we went on with the hearing, assuming that Dr. Sable's would be able to use his records and they would not be ignored. It turned out that the hearing examiner totally discounted Dr. Koob's letter. And I know the insurance company keeps saying in their briefs that he claimed there was a possibility of this injury. Well, the fact is they kept ignoring the one letter, another letter, on February 5th, 2004, in which Dr. Koob said, based on a reasonable medical certainty, here's what happened to him, and here was the cause of it. So I assumed that would be good enough if Dr. Sable could use that during the hearing, which he did, and it was just totally discounted by the hearing examiner. Well, in any event.
So are both of those letters in the record?
Yes, they're in the record, except the excised part that the hearing examiner excised about me asking the question, how should I ask a question, you know. The February 4th letters of 2004 is the most critical from Dr. Koob. Now, we tried to schedule at one point a deposition of Dr. Koob, but we could not find a mutual time to do it. I wish we had been able to, but we could not.
So there wasn't a time before his surgery that you could have gotten his deposition?
We tried. We couldn't find Mr. McKnight and I couldn't find a mutual time.
Is that in the record, too? Did you tell Judge Caldwell that?
You know, I don't recall if I told her that or not, Your Honor. In any event, If I can just, I know you know these by heart, but I want to recite a few principles of review that this court uses. We will reverse if we are definitely convinced the mistake has been committed. And I think in this case a tremendous mistake, and I'll go into that in a minute. A review of the record is made without any presumption that the circuit court's decision is correct. The question is not whether there is substantial evidence contrary to the agency's finding, but whether there is substantial evidence to support the agency's finding.
That's not our standard, though.
It isn't?
No. We abandoned that standard 8 years ago. That substantial evidence test is not our standard. But I see both of you use it in your briefs, both sides.
Yeah.
But I don't think the trial court used the trial court did not use the substantial evidence, just used the clearly erroneous standard, which is the correct standard.
Well, I talk about that too, so I guess I'm okay. I didn't know that was abandoned, though. I shepherdized the Curtin back v. Frito-Lay. I didn't see anything overruling that.
Well, we overruled it 8 years ago in Shopko versus CNR Transfer.
Shopko v. CNR Transfer. Thank you. In this case, Dr. Bouchara, who is the insurance company's expert, when his evidence was presented by deposition, and as your standard is that you review that testimony as though it's presented for the first time, and where the clearly erroneous rule does not apply, this court is not burdened with the presumption in favor of the trial court's determination. And that would be Dr. Bashar's deposition, because we don't need the clearly erroneous standard since it was by deposition. Under this standard, this court has gone on to say, we will decide for ourselves the credibility of the deponents and the weight and value to be attached to their testimony. That's the Fultz case. Now, in this case, the insurer's expert witness, Dr. Bashar, has made it very easy for this court to reverse the rulings both of the department and of the trial court. First of all, his testimony was presented by deposition. Secondly, he bet all of his marbles on what he called the radiologist's failure to find a vertebral artery dissection. And he claimed, if you'll read his deposition testimony all the way through, I asked him again and again, isn't this possible? He kept saying, it's not possible that it was a vertebral artery dissection simply because the radiologist couldn't find it. Well, the fact is the radiologist did find it, and there's a report. And this is the kind of a strange part. I have to concede I missed that in the first time around. There was a two-page report by the radiologist, Dr. Daniel Crosby. And in it, the first page, he talks about the carotid artery, which is in the front of the neck. And he said there was no dissection of the carotid artery. But page two, which I missed, and which apparently everybody missed at the first time around, page two said, there is a dissection of the vertebral artery consistent with the suspected dissection enunciated by Dr. Kube in his discharge summary of July 27th, whatever.
Mr. Everest, that's not what it says. The findings, there's findings and impressions in that report. Do you acknowledge there's a distinction between a finding and an impression, first of all?
Well, I don't know the distinction.
Okay, well then, the findings say no findings supportive of a dissection. The impressions merely say that there's an occluded vertebral artery that's consistent with a suspected dissection that was observed in July. Now, I don't see you repeatedly say that he absolutely found it, and I don't see that report as saying that.
Well, Your Honor, if you'd read his affidavit on the offer of proof, he clearly says it in there, clarifies whatever that impression was that he gave.
But where is it in this report where he finds
a
dissection? Well, I can read it if you don't know where it is.
I'm looking at the first page of his report. In which he talks about the carotid artery in the first page of his report. But then you go into page two, and it says occluded distal left and right vertebral arteries and basilar arteries as described, consistent with progression of suspected dissection seen on examinations of July 16, 2003. Well, I mean, that's medical talk for it was there.
What's the medical talk for? No findings supportive for a dissection.
Well, that's in the carotid artery, Your Honor.
Well, he's talking in that under his findings, he's talking about the vertebral arteries also.
No, not on the first page, Your Honor. Respectfully disagree.
It's in the first paragraph under the findings. The very first sentence.
Well, it says there's a complete absence of flow seen within the distal right and left vertebral arteries and basal arteries. Flow is present with both cerebral arteries supplying the patent posterior from the internal carotid arteries. Then the next paragraph, the left and right internal carotid, anterior and middle cerebral arteries are patent with no areas of high-grade stenosis or distal flow delay. No findings supportive of dissection. That's referring to the carotid artery. And if you'll read his affidavit, he clarifies that in there. Then on page 2, it goes right to the vertebral arteries and basal arteries, consistent with progression of suspected dissection seen on the examination of July 16th. I mean, it's very clear to me. It was very clear to Dr. Crosby when I talked to him and when he signed the affidavit. So there's clearly a discovery by him of the dissection. And Dr. Bushara, the insurance company's specialist, said no, there was no dissection of the vertebral artery. He said absolutely, he bets everything, all of his marbles on that. And all the way through, if you read his deposition, all the way through, he continually talks about no finding by this, as he called it, a brilliant radiologist. And I agree, the guy is brilliant. But he said there's no finding this by this brilliant radiologist of a dissection. Well, it's right there in front of him. And what I'm amazed at is the insurance company continues to deny that such a finding was made. And there, as I said in my brief, it's like there's a black car sitting right here, and they keep saying, oh, there's a red car. It's not a black car. When all the evidence is right in front of us, I don't know why they continue to say it. Well, they want to prevail in the case, I suppose that's why, but it's amazing to me. So I say there is no evidence whatsoever to support the administrative law judge's ruling. And there's no evidence whatsoever to support the affirmance of that ruling by the trial court. The trial court and the ALJ were totally erroneous, totally wrong, and there's, in the court's language, there's a grave mistake that's been made. It's denied Mrs. Tebben of a fair trial, and it's denied her her rights under the law.
What would you have us do? Would you have us simply declare that she's entitled to the benefits, or would you have us remand this for another hearing?
Well, I'd rather you declare it, reverse it. But, you know, I'll take whatever you give us.
Maybe I didn't ask that question properly.
What would be the proper thing for us to do?
The proper thing would be reverse it and say there's no evidence to support the department's finding, and that the trial court was erroneous and it should be reversed, and an award should be granted to the claimant, Mrs. Tebben. Now, one other point I'll make, and then I'm done. I had made a motion to Judge Nealis, who was then presiding on that case, to allow Dr. Koob to testify after the hearing, after I saw that the ALJ had totally discounted Dr. Koob's testimony. I asked for permission to bring him on to testify. That was rejected. And then later on, when I finally spotted page 2 of this report that had been just totally shuffled aside and ignored all the way through by everybody, apparently, I asked that Dr. Crosby be allowed to testify as well as Dr. Koob. And Judge Caldwell rejected that motion as well. And I think that was erroneous. I think that evidence would have clarified this case totally.
It would have clarified it, but isn't it directly contrary to Cavender? I mean, Cavender clearly says if you're on notice of what your standard of proof is and you don't sustain that level, you don't get another shot at it.
Well, Cavender, Your Honor, I distinguished Kavner on the grounds that they brought in a physicist instead of a medical doctor to testify about injuries. That's so clear and plain to me. This case is a little bit different. I understood that the administrative law judge would use Dr. Koob's evidence that was in the record already, and that's supported by Dr. Sable. She didn't. She totally ignored it, totally discounted it. So I think it was...
It was your choice. It was your gamble, wasn't it? As to the level.
It was. It was my choice. We could have delayed the hearing. We had no idea how long it would take him to recover. We could have delayed the hearing, and we decided that since Dr. Koob's evidence was in the record and could be used by Dr. Sable, we decided not to wait. So I know the other side talks about this as a trial strategy. I never looked at it as a strategy. I just said, you know, this makes more sense to do it this way than the other way, you know. It was not a calculated strategy on our part. Well, I thank the court for their attention.
Thank you, Mr. Everest. Mr. McKnight, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike McKnight. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls, and I represent Gilhaugen Construction and their workers' compensation insurance company, General Casualty. First off, Justice Konenkamp, much like Mr. Abrask, I guess I apologize if we've got the wrong standard of review in the brief. Certainly my understanding was that it was still a substantial evidence standard, and I apologize for that.
But maybe you can confirm this. I don't think the trial court did use that standard.
I don't believe she did. I think she looked at it from the standpoint of clearly erroneous, which I guess is the proper standard. This is undoubtedly a tragic situation. A 45-year-old man who was the sole breadwinner for his family died. There's no question that there is a lot of sympathy here for Ms. Tabin and her son. I would ask, though, however, that this court not let any of that sympathy cloud their judgment in their review of this record. As this court has said many times, the laws with regard to workers' compensation are to be liberally construed in favor of the claimant, but that doesn't apply to the evidence that's submitted on this claim. And I'd like to talk about the evidence, and certainly some of the questions from the court this morning have focused on the evidence, and I think rightfully so. First of all, this was and is a very unusual fact scenario. Mr. Tabin died on July 28, 2003, after life support was removed. He died, in essence, of a stroke. And the issue in the case, of course, was what caused the stroke, and were his work activities a major contributing cause of the scenario that led to his stroke. And as the record establishes, his first symptoms appeared on a Saturday, July 12th of 2003, while he was at home. He had additional symptoms on July 16th of 2003, again while at home. And finally, more symptoms on July 21 at home, which ultimately led to his hospitalization and then subsequently led to his death. Dr. Koob was one of his treating doctors. Dr. Koob is a neurologist in Sioux Falls. There are two letters from Dr. Koob that are in this record, and Justice Meyer, Henry, you had some question about that, and I want to make sure everybody understands this. There is a December 5, 2003 letter from Dr. Koob to Mr. Abrask, and there is a February 5, 2004 letter from Dr. Koob, again to Mr. Abrask. Both of those letters appear in the Joint Medical Record Exhibit, which was Exhibit 1 at the hearing. Matter of fact, they're found at pages 1 and page 2 of that particular exhibit. The letter that I don't believe is in the record anywhere. Now, it was submitted to the Department of Labor for in-camera inspection in response to our motion to compel, but that's the letter that Mr. Abrask quoted from in questioning Dr. Bashara at his deposition. We filed a motion to compel, and that letter was submitted. The Department of Labor looked at that in an in-camera inspection. I'll confess I didn't look at the department record to see if that's sealed somewhere or is part of the record, but there are two letters here from Dr. Koob that did make it into the record, that were stipulated into the record, that being pages 1 and pages and page 2 of exhibit number 1, the joint medical record exhibit. And it's important, I think, because it kind of sets the scenario here. During Dr. Bashara's deposition, Mr. Aberesk asks Dr. Bashara a question, quoting from this letter that we do not have. We ask in the deposition to see that letter. He says, no, we filed a motion to compel. The motion to compel is denied. Now, at that point in time, the hearing had been set for September 1. Once that motion to compel was denied, we were in the process of trying to get Dr. Koob's deposition scheduled before that September 1 hearing. My recollection is that Mr. Aberesk was going to call Dr. Koob live. I wanted an opportunity to take his deposition to find out and to test his opinions prior to that hearing. We couldn't get that lined up in time. I filed a motion to continue the hearing. That motion was granted. The hearing was continued until early October. At that point then, because we had the September 1 hearing date, Mr. Aberesk and I agreed, okay, let's go take Dr. Koob's deposition. We know we're both free that day, and he's free because he was going to come and testify. And it was at that point when Dr. Koob got sick and had some heart issues. Shortly after that, then, is the September 8, 2004 letter from Mr. Aberesk to the Department of Labor, which is cited as part of the record, and it's cited in Judge Caldwell's opinion, where Mr. Aberesk states, rather than delay the hearing once again, I have decided to withdraw Dr. Koob's name as an expert witness in this case. And I will not use his testimony at all, excuse me, except for the medical records which he has provided, which Mr. McKnight and I have tentatively agreed to stipulate into the record.
So you both agree then that you could not have scheduled Dr. Koob's deposition before the hearing?
Dr. Koob was out of commission with some heart ailments. We were not able to get his deposition taken on September 1. My understanding, and I think Mr. Aberesk is accurate, he was in the healing process. We didn't know when he was going to be coming back or could testify. We made no attempt to try to get his deposition taken between September 1 and the date of the actual hearing. Frankly, I was content, given the two letters from Dr. Koob, which I'll talk about here in a moment, I was content with just having those be his testimony, so to speak. There was never a motion for a continuance. There was never any discussion that we had with regard to perhaps supplementing the record later when Dr. Koob had healed up and taken his deposition. None of that happened. So certainly the way I look at it is Mr. Aberesk made his bed, so to speak, with regard to Dr. Koob. Now, a lot of what he's talking about here this morning with regard to both Dr. Koob and particularly with regard to Dr. Crosby, and it's clear that Dr. Koob says this and it's clear that Dr. Crosby says that, that's stuff that he's gotten after the fact. That's the subject of his motion to present additional evidence. And this court can't consider that on the main appeal issue. The only way you can consider that, anybody could consider that, is to find that his motion to present additional evidence was improperly denied. And I don't think under Cavender and under the state of our law that that's the case. Clearly the motion was timely. I'll concede that for purposes here today that Dr. Koob's testimony would be material, but Mr. Aberesk has to show good cause, and I don't believe there is any good cause. And the standard of review on that issue is whether or not there's an abuse of discretion, and clearly there was no abuse of discretion. Dr. Koob's letters, the two that are in the record, the first letter, and this is quoted in the briefs, but he refers to Mr. Tebben's work as being significant possibilities as to the cause of his problems. This court has repeatedly held that a possibility is not sufficient. I would also point out, and this is found in the Joint Medical Record Exhibit at page 66, and this is Dr. Koob's discharge summary from the hospitalization on July 16. Dr. Koob is even more wishy-washy in that discharge summary than he is in that letter. Dr. Koob in that record states, the other thing is that he was doing some work where they were doing a lot of caulking of a ceiling, where he was working with arms above his head and his neck tilted back. He certainly possibly could be involved in this. Now, that does not meet the requisite standard here of medical proof of medical causation under the state of the law. No question about it. So, what is the Department of Labor faced with when it goes to hearing? It's faced with Dr. Koob and letters and records from Dr. Koob where he talks about his work being a possibility in the cause of this problem. You have Dr. Sabo, who testifies live, and the Department of Labor got an opportunity to sit and watch and observe Dr. Sabo's testimony. And you have Dr. Bashara. Now, Dr. Bashara, Mr. Aberis refers to him as the insurance company doctor, and no question that we had to hire him for purposes of a records review. Dr. Bashara is no slouch. And I would point the court to Dr. Bashara's deposition, which was submitted as part of the hearing, and Exhibit 1, which is his curriculum vitae. This is a very qualified individual. The man is a staff physician for the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. He's an assistant professor of neurology at the University of Minnesota, has a very active neurology practice. This is not someone who is simply some hired gun who came off the street who's opining on issues that he knows nothing about. Mr. Aberesk refers repeatedly today, as well as in his brief and down below, while Dr. Bashara absolutely said, radiologist didn't find a dissection, there's no dissection here, couldn't have happened. Dr. Bashara's report is far more reasoned than that, and I would point the court to Dr. Bashara's deposition exhibit number 3, and in particular, bottom of page 6, carrying over onto page 7. And Dr. Bashara, in that portion, his summary of his discussions and conclusions, talks about the MRA reports and why he believes there was no evidence for vertebral artery dissection. It's not simply that, well, the radiologist didn't say so. I mean, he goes through in detail why he believes that there is no vertebral artery dissection.
Does he ever specifically address the page 2 of Dr. Crosby's report?
He does, Your Honor. He mentions page 2, and maybe I'm not sure what you mean by address. He talks about it and cites from it on page 6, up at the top of page 6 of Exhibit 3. He quotes right from it. He says, these findings were interpreted to be consistent with progression of suspected dissection seen on MRI, should be MRA, of July 16, 2003. Dr. Bashara was provided with all these records. He didn't ignore anything. He's reached a different opinion, and it's an opinion that Mr. Aberesk doesn't like and doesn't agree with. But he had all the information. He clearly saw that page 2 of that report from Dr. Crosby.
What did he say about it?
Pardon me?
What did he say about it?
Well, what he...
First impression.
I'm sorry.
Let me get it out here. What does he say about impression number 1, where Dr. Crosby...
He was not specifically asked the question by Mr. Aberesk or anyone else, and frankly, I don't know that it was our responsibility to ask him those questions. Mr. Aberesk never cross-examined him about that report. The point I'm trying to make is that there's been some mention here that, well, everybody just sort of blew this report off and didn't pay any attention to it. That's not true. Dr. Bashara saw the report. He quotes from it in his report, and he reached the conclusion, based upon his experience and training as a neurologist, that there was no dissection. And the reasons that he felt that are on page 6, carrying on to page 7. So he clearly knew about it. And this report was... It was part of the medical records, and Mr. Aberesk could have crossed Dr. Bashara on it. He chose not to do so. He could have asked Dr. Sabo about it. He chose not to do so. And I don't think any of these things fall on my shoulders. It's not my job to prove his case. It's his job to prove it. That's pretty clear. And he didn't do that. Why he chose not to depose Dr. Koob, maybe it was a timing thing. I don't know. But he made that bed, and he's got to sleep in it. The other thing, and Justice Sinner, you've certainly have picked up on it as well, as did Judge Caldwell. You know, Dr. Crosby's report, and incidentally, that is found at pages 215 and 216 of Exhibit 1, but Dr. Crosby's MRA report does not say there was a dissection. There is not one radiologist report in this record that says there was a dissection. The radiology MRA report, page 215, under his findings, no findings supportive for a dissection. That seems pretty clear. Under his impression, he says progression of suspected dissection. That doesn't get the job done. Dr. Crosby does not, in this report, say that there was a vertebral artery dissection.
In that paragraph where you're reading no findings supportive of a dissection, the immediate sentence before that doesn't mention vertebral arteries. It only talks about corroded and cerebral arteries.
That's correct, Your Honor, and the paragraph above talks about vertebral arteries, and that sentence, the no findings supportive for a dissection, is contained within his findings section. And I'll concede that perhaps there's some ambiguity there. But again, it's not our job, my job, to sort out what that ambiguity is. That's Mr. Abarath's job. And certainly this court can't sit. Disrespect intended, but the last I knew, none of us in this room are radiologists or neurologists. We can't read this stuff and say, yes, it is. No, it's not. I mean, the record speaks for itself. So the Department of Labor is presented with Dr. Sabo, who, after sitting and listening to his testimony, found his opinions not to be persuasive. You have Dr. Koob, who on one hand says possibility, and then in the February 5 letter says, well, in my opinion, based on reasonable medical certainty, the cause of his stroke was dissection of the vertebral artery. And then when he's discussing whether or not the work, whether that was related to his work, he doesn't set it forth to the same standard. There are other records where Dr. Koob has certainly gone back and forth on this issue. And I don't think you can say that it's clearly erroneous on this record that the department concluded that the medical evidence here was inconclusive.
But once, I mean, you concede that it's possible that Dr. Crosby's report is ambiguous. But he cleared up that ambiguity when he submitted this affidavit saying that isn't what I meant. What I meant was that there was a dissection.
And the only way you get to the affidavit is to find that Mr. Abarath's motion to present additional evidence was improperly denied.
Isn't that where we get into
not improperly denied? It was not
where we get to the liberal construction of our workers' compensation statutes.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Unless you want to stand workers' compensation on its head, you don't get to go through a hearing. I guess to use maybe a golf analogy, you don't get a mulligan, which is exactly I think what Mr. Abarath is asking for here. He tried his case, he lost, he found out why the Department of Labor said he lost, and now he wants to go back in and fix it. And I don't believe that's how the law operates. And again, I'm sorry that Mr. Tevin died, and this is a very tragic situation. But that fact doesn't change the fact that Dr. Koob could have testified had there been a continuance of the hearing at some point in time. This case moved quicker than any case I've ever been involved in on the work comp side. I mean, it was less than a year between the filing of the petition and the actual hearing. And that's to Mr. Abarath's credit. I'm not saying that in a negative way. He pushed this thing along. Well, he pushed it along, and now he's facing the consequences of it. Dr. Koob could have been deposed. He could have cross-examined Dr. Bashara on Dr. Crosby. He could have identified Dr. Crosby as an expert witness, and Dr. Crosby was never even identified in the pretrial expert witness disclosures. He had those records. And it's certainly not my problem or my client's problem that he did not make his case. He simply did not make his case and should not now be allowed to go back in and try to fix it.
By a dissection of the vertebral artery, are you referring to a complete dissection or just a tear?
I'm trying to remember, Justice Sabers, what the testimony is, and My recollection is it's not a dissection in the common usage of the term. In other words, you think of dissection and it's just completely, you know, cut, dissected in half. I think this is more of a tear, a separation of the various linings of the artery itself. I know Dr. Sabo talked about that, and I think Dr. Bashara in his deposition also.
So the artery, on the exterior layer of the artery would be intact?
I think the exterior layer would be intact, but there would be some separation between some of the inner layers. Again, I'm not a doctor, but that's my layperson's understanding of it. And there were things, as Dr. Bashara pointed out, that he looked for that would be suggestive of a dissection, and he did not see any of those in his review of the records. And again, I would strongly urge the court to look at Dr. Bashara's deposition and his CV and his reports, because I think this is a very well-qualified neurologist who did an excellent job of reviewing this case and providing opinions that ultimately led the Department of Labor to conclude that the medical evidence was inconclusive. I'm not going to address our notice of review issue.
You're right, you're out of time.
Yeah, I'll stand on the briefs on that issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McNabe. Mr. Abrask, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Ron. Mr. McKnight started out by saying that there shouldn't be any sympathy extended by this court to the widow. I didn't bring that up. That was not my thing. I could have said that's her only means of support. She's on disability. I could have said that's her only means of support, but I didn't do that because I wasn't seeking sympathy. But
you're not coming in the back door now, are you?
No. I'm just trying to deny what I was accused of. Now, the third letter that was part of the controversy that Mr. McKnight talked about, I read everything into the deposition of Dr. Bashara. I asked him a question as I read the letter in there, all the part except that part that was withheld by the hearing examiner. So if you want to refer to that letter, it is in his deposition. He talks about how qualified Dr. Bashara is, yet, and he said that Dr. Bashara did not ignore Dr. Crosby's report. But I can't find anywhere where he discusses Dr. Crosby's report. All he says time and time again in his deposition is the radiologist did not find a dissected vertebral artery. Now, as I recall, by the way, Dr. Sable's explanation of the vertebral artery, it's built like a cardboard box in a way, in a sense, that there's an outer layer, then an inner layer that is stuck to the outer layer. And he said when there's damage or an injury, that comes apart, and I think it, when they say dissection, I think it does mean it's broken or cut somehow. And it was cut because he had a 1984 car accident in which the C2 disc was fractured in that accident. He had to wear a halo brace for some time after that 1984 accident. That's when Dr. Sable, when he found out about that, went back and looked at records of that 84 accident. And that's when he determined that was the original start of the rend of the vertebral artery. That's what started it. And then the years of construction work, including the last 3 years with Haugen, of his bouncing around with construction equipment and doing work of caulking ceilings and windows over his head, is what really brought it about. And that's why Dr. Sabo, as well as Dr. Koob, said it was his work activity that caused this dissection, that caused his death. Now,
Mr. Abrask, if Crosby's report really says what you say it says, and if Bashara says no radiologist found a dissection, why didn't you cross him on that?
Your Honor, as I said in my original argument, I didn't catch it right away. I didn't catch page 2 of the of Dr. Crosby's report until after the hearing was done. It's my mistake, yet I caught it in time for the appeal, And then when I tried to get Dr. Crosby's testimony, and I was denied that motion, of course, but he would have, as he did in his offer of proof, he would have testified very clearly that it was, he definitely found a dissected vertebral artery. And I think the court's entitled to look at that evidence. It's in the record, and it's part of the motion that was denied when I asked for his testimony to be allowed afterward. So I think the court can adequately use that. Does that answer the question? Thank you. That's the reason I didn't cross-examine Dr. Bashar, but whether I cross-examined him or not, the fact is it was in the record, and he was reviewing the records. He's a doctor. He should be able to spot that stuff. He did not discuss page 2, which talks about the carotid artery, or the vertebral artery. He only referred to page 1, which says no dissection present, no findings supportive of the dissection. That, if you look at it, refers only to the carotid artery in front, not to the vertebral artery. Because you go right to page 2, then he says the vertebral artery is dissected. So I don't know how anyone can say that that he looked at it and discussed it. He did not. Whether he did it deliberately or whether he missed it too, I don't know. I have no way of knowing. But the fact is that he did miss it, and he based his entire testimony on page 1, meaning no findings of supportive of a dissected vertebral artery. So the fact is there was a giant mistake made here by Dr. Bashara and by the department and by the trial court, because it was pointed out to the trial court after the hearing was over that this is what took place. And so far as Dr. Sable's testimony, I don't know what more the department would need so far as adequate foundation and expertise. Dr. Sable conducted a virtual seminar on the vertebral artery and the blood flow in the neck and so on. And where this talk comes from, I think it comes from the insurance company, their part. They keep saying Dr. Sable's not qualified. He's been a neurologist for 25 years out in Rapid City. He was one of the first neurologists in the state of South Dakota, and certainly the first one in Rapid City. And he knows, he's been doing this for years. He knows exactly what he's talking about. Nobody else thought to go back and check the 1984 accident to see what might have been the original cause of this start of the dissection of the vertebral artery. But Dr. Sabo did. He's highly qualified, and I would have to say that because Dr. Bashara based his entire testimony on no finding by the radiologist, I'd say his testimony should be totally discounted. He has no credibility, I don't believe. So whatever he says, I don't think has any bearing on anything at all. So I thank the court for the attention.
Thank you, Mr. Abrest. Court will be in recess until 10 o'clock.